Jerry Condon is a former Green Beret who refused to fight in Vietnam. He worked with the draft resistors and military resistors who fled to Canada during the Vietnam War. And he is currently organizing support for U.S. military personnel who have gone to Canada rather than fight in an illegal war of aggression. Let's welcome Jerry.
Thank you. I am really proud and really happy to be part of this panel. A little bit humbled. Is it hard to follow PAM Africa? Well, it's really actually easy to follow this group because they put it all out there. I mean, this anti-draft movement is going to be class conscious. It's going to be anti-racist. It's going to be anti-imperialist. And when I hear this wisdom and this resistance and this resolve coming here, and I know it's happened in a lot of places around the country, you know, I think George Bush is going to have a tough few years ahead. Our movement is growing, and I really, as each day goes by, I become more convinced we're going to win. My good friend Carol Wolverton was joking with me last night that I had been drafted to speak at this anti-draft panel. And I told her, well, you know, I had to be drafted because I was in the Army, and you learn, you know, after a while, you learn not to volunteer. I'm what they call a triple volunteer. I volunteered for the Army under pressure from the Vietnam draft. I volunteered for airborne, jumping out of airplanes and all that. And I volunteered for Green Berets. So when I finally realized I couldn't participate in that immoral war, and started speaking out against it and refusing orders in the Army, you know, they said to me, Private Condon, you're a triple volunteer. You can't back out now. It's too late. And I said, well, no, it's not too late. It's never too late to come to the right decision and take the right stand. So they court-martialed me and sentenced me to 10 years in prison. Get this, the maximum sentence for refusing a direct order in the Army is 5 years and dishonorable discharge. And they convicted me of 2 counts of refusing the same order to go to Vietnam, and then gave me the maximum sentence on each count for a 10-year prison sentence and a dishonorable discharge. But part of the reason they gave me such a high sentence was they were pissed off because by the time my court-martial was over, I had escaped and gone to Canada. And I went to Sweden. I spent 3 years in Sweden. I spent 3 years in Canada. Got very involved with the anti-war movement and the exiled GI movement and learned a lot. When I came back after 6 years in exile, I still had a prison sentence hanging over me. I came back as part of the movement for amnesty, refusing to participate in President Ford, after he gave Nixon an unconditional pardon, he gave us this little bullshit clemency program, and we said no way. So I came back as part of that movement fighting for amnesty, and the movement was big enough and strong enough by that time that I never did a single day in jail. And some of you may remember that President Jimmy Carter's very first act as president was to give an unconditional pardon to draft resistors. So now it's kind of like, as Yogi Berra said, it's deja vu all over again. There's 6,000 deserters currently, according to the Pentagon. That's people who've been AWOL for over 30 days. A number of them, like myself, actually fled the country, gone to Canada and other countries. During the Vietnam War, there were between 60 and 100,000 U.S. draft resistors and deserters who went to Canada, and about 800 who went to Sweden, and a number who were in France, England, and here and there. And we made those countries another base from which to fight against this war. The option of having a place for GI resistors to go if they had a need to flee meant they were a little more bold and more able to organize and resist within the military. So opening up sanctuaries for war resistors, those war resistors who decide they're not going to go to jail, they're unable to get a discharge, opening up sanctuaries in other countries is very important. And I should say, among those 60 to 100,000 war resistors that went to Canada during that time. Many of them were women. In fact, I've heard the Canadian immigration statistics actually say that. This is kind of hard to believe, but it may be true. During the Vietnam War, there were more women from the U.S. immigrated to Canada than men. And some of them were with draft resistor boyfriends or whatever, and a lot of them just said, getting the hell out of this place, you know, it's time to go somewhere else. And at this point in time, 30,000 of those war resistors who went to Canada still live there. They're Canadian citizens now, and many of them prominent in Canadian society. 10,000 live in the Greater Toronto area alone and are now involved in the war resistor support campaign there, supporting a new generation of exiled GI war resistors. Some of you may have read that Jeremy Hinsman, who's the first U.S. war resistor to apply for refugee status in Canada, was recently denied refugee status by the Immigration and Refugee Board. The Canadian government actually intervened in that refugee hearing and argued that we could not raise the issue of the legality of the war. Now, even though the war is not defensive, was not approved by the UN Security Council, was based on lies, and is characterized by widespread commission of war crimes, we were not allowed to raise the legality of the war in that hearing. Of course, the Canadians are feeling a little bit of pressure from the White House, you can be sure. But I want to tell you that Canada is still an option for those who choose to go there. There's going to be a long struggle on both the legal and political fronts. There's a growing campaign there that is pushing the government and saying, we don't care, you know, if you end up given refugee status or not, if you have some technical definition of refugee that you don't think applies to U.S. deserters, you don't want to include them in that, that's fine. But we're not going to stand for you sending deserters back to the United States to go to prison for refusing to fight in an unjust war, and would demand that you provide some kind of sanctuary for U.S. war resistors. And I can tell you this will happen. During the Vietnam War, we could immigrate fairly easily to Canada. That's no longer an option. That's why people are applying for refugee status. Of the six or seven who've now applied for refugee status, they include Jeremy Hinsman's from South Dakota, Brandon Huey's from rural West Texas, David Sanders is from small town Arizona last month, Joshua Key, I believe, is from Oklahoma. He's an Iraq veteran. He's already done a tour, and he doesn't want to go back for another one. Showed up with his wife and four kids, 8 months old to 7 years. And so they're getting a lot of support. There's others that are from Kentucky, and I guess the point I'm trying to make is interesting that these resistors are not coming from New York City and San Francisco and places like that. They're coming from a lot of places where you might not expect. You can tell this to your friends who have kids in the military, or you can tell it to your friends who are in the military. If they do decide that they want to get the heck out of this country and get some protection, they can go to Canada as a visitor, get legal representation, apply for a refugee status, and they will immediately be covered and protected under Canadian refugee laws until their case is decided. There's such a backlog in those cases that it might take a year before they have a hearing. So at a minimum, they're going to have a year, maybe two, maybe more. Maybe they'll be able to stay in Canada as long as they want. That's our goal, and I think that's possible. But even if that's not possible, they've got maybe a year or two where they're living legally in Canada, they have a work permit, they're not in the war, and they're not in prison. And that's an option people should know about. Get inside the country, get a lawyer. Jeffrey House in Toronto is representing all these war resistors currently. I have an article on the table outside there. It says Jeremy Hinsman leads way for U.S. war resistors in Canada. It's got information and contact information there that should be helpful. I've been a little surprised that the anti-war movement hasn't been bolder in calling on soldiers to resist. And oftentimes I hear people say, well, you know, that's against the law to encourage people to desert. You know, that's a serious offense. And I'm saying, well, you know, these guys have put their asses on the line, men and women, I should say. You know, we ought to be willing to take a few risks ourselves. That's called solidarity. Thank you. And we're not breaking the law, by the way. We're obeying international law. We're obeying the Nuremberg Principles. We're obeying the Geneva Conventions on War. We're obeying the UN Convention on Refugees. All those, we have international law totally on our side, and we should take the high ground. And I should add that since the U.S. Congress has ratified all those laws and treaties, we're also obeying U.S. law when we refuse to fight in an illegal war. Finally, let me say that, you know, I remain uncertain myself whether there's going to be a draft or not. I know they have a problem. They have a serious problem on their hands. They're going to need to resolve it one way or another. Some people are talking about, well, maybe they're just going to have a selective draft. They're going to draft people who have medical skills. They're going to draft people who have computer skills and this and that. I was in the anti-registration movement of the early 80s, and we were sure the draft was coming back, and it didn't. It hasn't yet. But at the same time, as has been said, we have all these backdoor drafts going on. We've got the poverty draft going on. We have the threat of another widespread draft going on, and I think it needs to be addressed. I was looking for Bertolt Brecht's poem this morning, his famous anti-war poem, you know, "General, your tank is a powerful vehicle. It smashes down forests and crushes 100 men, but it has one defect. It needs a driver." And he ends that poem saying, "General, man is very useful. He can fly and he can kill, but he has one defect. He can think." And I used to think, well, that's a great poem, you know, it encourages people to resist war, but, you know, they're always going to be able to find somebody else to drive that tank. But right now, they have a real problem. They don't even have enough people to fill their military staffing needs in Iraq. So that when we organize against the draft and against recruitment in the schools, etc., we're hitting them where it hurts. And finally, I say Jeremy Hinsman and a number of other war resisters, aside from joining the military for educational benefits, etc., have said, you know, I really wanted to be part of something bigger than myself, you know. And so I think the message we should be giving to young people now is, you want to be part of something bigger than yourself, join the movement against the draft, join the movement against the war, and join the movement against U.S. imperialism. Thank you.